Hello.
And welcome back
to Behind the Crime.
We're your hosts, Rebecca Wood
and Ella Calora.
This is our 21st episode.
Whoop, whoop.
Fun fact.
And fun fact, we're both not 21.
I'm 30, so.
No, you're not. You're 20.
Prove it. Anyways, in this episode, we're talking about Amelia Earhart. Obviously, we know this is a lot different than what we've been doing, which we've kind of been doing a lot of lately, doing a lot of different kinds of episodes, but
yeah.
It is a disappearance, so technically that does fall under what we've done before. We did disturbing disappearances, that episode. Technically, yeah. No one knows what happened. Although mine, you know, the girl was found dead, so you know.
Yeah.
But yours.
Also, it's our podcast, and we can talk about whatever we want.
Oh, she's feeling silly today. Can you guys tell?
Oh.
I can. So the way that we wanted to split this up is I'm going to talk about Amelia's life, basically. Feels weird calling her Amelia. Anyways.
Instead of Amelia Earhart? Oh, yeah. It is Amelia.
Anyways, I'm going to talk about basically her life all the way up until the flight and kind of what the flight was supposed to be. And then Ella is going to take over from there with what happened that we know, and then all the crazy theories that people have made up over the years, as well as a new update that just came out like a month ago.
Yeah, crazy stuff.
So we're gonna get into it. So Amelia Earhart was born on July 24th in 1897 in Atchison, Kansas. Her mother was named Amy Otis, and her father was Edwin Earhart. Alliteration right there.
Edwin.
Mm-hmm. You ever heard that? I know an Edwin.
I feel like that's a lie.
No, I mean it.
Lie a lot. Like, you play the harp. No.
I do.
Your dad did Irish step dancing.
He did.
I don't know. And you know an Edwin?
Mm-mm. I do. Okay.
Let's be serious now, because now I have wasted 5 minutes and 19
seconds. Don't say
seconds.
We. It's you. Okay. So her father, Edwin Earhart, was a railroad lawyer, which I guess was
what is that?
Well, you know the railroads were going on down there back then.
A lawyer, though, specifically.
He made sure they were allowed to have railroads there. I don't know.
Okay.
Listen, we're talking about her, not him. So, all right. So, like I said, he was a railroad lawyer, and her mother came from a really wealthy, well-off family.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Amelia Earhart was 2, her parents had another child who they named Muriel. So she had a sister who's 2 years younger than her. And then what I found out that I didn't know and I thought was interesting was during her childhood, she spent the school year in Atchison, Kansas with her maternal grandparents and the summers in Kansas City with her parents.
Interesting.
Yeah. So most of the year she wasn't with her parents.
Hmm.
Which is odd. I mean, I don't know. I guess that worked for them. She apparently, as a child, as I'm sure this probably makes sense to everybody, she had a very adventurous and independent personality and behaved very adventurously. Her grandma apparently was not a fan of how outdoorsy she was. She disapproved of it, but she still spent her free time riding imaginary horses, exploring nature, climbing trees, sledding, and hunting. Aww. So she's what you would call a tomboy. And her grandma was not a fan, but I don't know. She didn't do anything about it.
She said, too bad, grandma.
She did. Yeah. So in 1908, when she was 11, she went to live with her parents in Des Moines, Iowa. And this is where she saw an airplane for the first time at the state fair. Later in life, after seeing this airplane, she is quoted saying, it was a thing of rusty wire and wood and looked not at all interesting. So that's silly. Just because, like, the first time she saw a plane, she was like, okay. And then later she became one of the most well-known pilots, like, ever.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. So then in 1911, Amelia's grandmother, who basically raised her, died. And her father, Amelia's father, began to struggle with alcoholism and lost his job. He then checked himself into a mental hospital for 1 month. And in 1913, the family moved to St. Paul, Minnesota. They did a lot of moving. And Amelia's father was still struggling with his alcoholism and wasn't able to hold down a job. And at a certain point, he couldn't even get hired anymore. So her mother, Amy, left him and took the two girls to Chicago. In 1916, Amelia Earhart graduated from Hyde Park High School in Chicago, and she chose the school to enroll in because they had the best science program in the area. She really loved science, so that was her, like, main focus.
Mm-hmm.
And she apparently didn't make many friends, like, at all in high school, and her yearbook photo is captioned, A.E., the girl in brown who walks alone.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I was like, oh,
that's so sad.
Why would they write that? So after graduating high school, she went to an exclusive finishing school, which is called the Ogan School, and it's near Philly. She excelled in her academics and became vice president of her class, but ended up dropping out to volunteer at Toronto's Spadina Military Hospital as a nurse for World War I soldiers.
Hmm.
Which I also never knew that she was a nurse at one point. So while she was in Toronto working as a nurse, she went to a flight exposition with a friend, and a stunt pilot dove at Amelia and her friend, which she says he did in hopes to scare them and make them flinch, but Amelia didn't even react at all, which I think embarrassed him a little bit. Awkward for him. So she also credits this experience with being her personal awakening. She said, I did not understand it at the time, but I believe that little red airplane said something to me as it swished by. So true.
It did.
So in fall of 1918, Earhart began to attend medical school at Columbia University. But in 1920, she left college to return to Los Angeles, where her parents have reunited, gotten back together. And they weren't legally divorced at this point. They had just been separated. So in 1920, in Long Beach, Earhart attended an air show with her father, and pilot Frank Hawk took her on her first flight, which is when she instantly knew that she had to fly a plane herself.
Mm.
And, well, she did. Then in 1921, Earhart took her first pilot's lesson with Neta Snook. I don't know how to say it. So sorry. To save money for these lessons, she took on a lot of odd jobs. She worked as a truck driver, a stenographer, and a photographer. And after 6 months, she was able to buy her first plane. It was a yellow Kenner Airster she named Canary. In December of 1921, she finally got her pilot's license and flew in the Pacific Coast Ladies Derby in Pasadena 2 days after getting her license.
Hmm. Ambitious.
Yep. In 1922, on October 2nd, she set an unofficial altitude record for women when she was flying her Canary, and she made it to 14,000 feet, which no other woman had done before at that point.
Hmm.
In 1923, she was given her international pilot's license and became the 16th woman to ever obtain this. And then in 1924, her parents officially divorced, and Earhart returned to Massachusetts with her mother to move in with her sister Muriel. And the dad, I assume, stayed in Los Angeles or in California. So briefly, she actually re-enrolled at Columbia University, but ended up moving back to Boston to work as a teacher and then as a social worker at Denison House, where she taught English to Chinese and Syrian immigrants.
Hmm.
Like I said, she did a lot of things that don't, like, what? Like, I never knew that. And then in 1927, she enrolled in the Boston chapter of the National Aeronautics Association and was featured in newspapers as an advocate for female pilots and also just for aviation in general. Okay, so June 17th, 1928, Amelia Earhart and her pilot Wilmer Stultz and co-pilot and mechanic Louis Gordon departed from Newfoundland in the Friendship, which is a tri-motor seaplane, and they arrived in Wales over 20 hours later and were greeted by cheering crowds. So she basically achieved overnight stardom. She was the first woman passenger on a transatlantic flight, but she didn't feel like she deserved any acclaim for that. And she said, Stultz did all the flying. I was just baggage like a sack of potatoes and added, maybe someday I'll try it alone. So she was like, I don't know why I'm being praised. Like, all I did was sit there on a plane. So in 1928, she published her first book called 20 Hours, 40 Minutes. And it was about her flight with Stultz and Gordon, and then went on a national book tour and endorsed products such as Lucy Strike cigarettes and Modern Air Earhart luggage. She also became the aviation editor for Cosmopolitan. And then in 1929, she bought her second plane, which was a single-engine Lockheed Vega. In her Vega, she participated in the women's air derby race from Santa Monica to Cleveland and placed third. She then, in the same year, 1929, helped found the 99s, Inc., which is the first organization for women aviators. On July 5th, 1930, she set the women's world record for flying speed with a record of 181.18 miles per hour. And then between 1930 and 1935, she set 7 new women's speed and distance records. So she was beating her own records. Then on February 7th, 1931, Amelia Earhart married George Palmer Putnam. What's funny is she wasn't super into the idea of marriage because she just felt like she was going to like lose control over herself, like that she was going to have someone in charge of her. So she actually refused George's proposal 6 times before accepting. So he proposed to her 7 times in total. He was committed. And then she also made it very well known publicly that her marriage was going to be a partnership with dual control. Because I think people didn't want her to see her as a housewife now that she was married or anything like that. Or expect her to start settling down and having kids. Which, you know, that wasn't her thing. Then in 1932, she wrote her second book, which was called The Fun of It. May 20th to May 21st in 1932, she became the first woman to fly solo across the Atlantic Ocean. She departed from Newfoundland and landed in Northern Ireland in a pasture. This flight earned her the Distinguished Flying Cross from Congress and the Cross of the Knight of the Legion of Honor from the French government. That's a long name. The Cross of the Knight of the Legion of Honor.
That is a long name.
I need to cut it down. And she won the gold medal of the National Geographic Society from President Hoover. And for that award, she was the first woman to ever win. So the site that she landed in Ireland in that pasture now has a small museum known as the Amelia Earhart Center. So if you're in Ireland, check it out. I'm on my way.
I was going to say, you'll be there.
I will. So then from August 24th to 25th in 1932, she became the first woman to fly solo across the North American continent and back. Then in 1933, she visited and developed a friendship with Eleanor Roosevelt, who was the first lady at the time. And they, like, communicated a lot after that. Like, they were just friends. Which kind of makes sense to me. They seem like they'd vibe.
Yeah.
And then also in 1933, she flew across North America for the second time and broke her own record with a faster flight time. So she was really...
She was a busy bee.
Yeah. It seems like she didn't really, like... I don't know. She was like, it's not good enough. She just had to keep going, you know, and keep beating her own records, which is cool. She was determined. So then on January 11th, 1935, she became the first person to fly solo from Honolulu, Hawaii to Oakland, California. She also flew solo from Los Angeles to Mexico City on April 19th to 20th in 1935. And later, on May 8th in 1935, flew from Mexico City to New York. In between flights, she was working as a career counselor to women at Purdue University. For some reason, every episode we do, like, somehow I feel like comes back to Purdue.
It does.
Like, hello?
That's so weird.
So in July of 1936, Amelia Earhart raised money to buy a plane, and much of the money was given to her by Purdue University, and she bought a Lockheed Electra 10E, which she named the Flying Laboratory. I'm for it. It's silly.
It is silly.
So this plane was bought to accomplish her goal of circumnavigating the globe. Earhart and her husband, Putnam, George Putnam, began to plan her record-setting flight and raised more money and consulted with navigators, advisors, and mechanics. So then March 17th, 1937, Earhart, her navigator Fred Noonan, a stunt pilot named Paul Mance, and Captain Harry Manning fly the first leg of the trip from Oakland, California to Honolulu, Hawaii in 15 hours and 47 minutes. They then try to continue their trip, but the plane ground loops during takeoff and the flight is called off entirely. So later on, she decided to begin her second attempt, which was June 1st, 1937, so she took a little bit of time between. And this time, she departed from Miami, Florida, and was only with her navigator, Fred Noonan. Now, I am going to talk a little bit about Fred Noonan, just because I feel like people don't ever talk about him, and he was also a person who went missing, you know, at the same time as her. So, and no one knows what happened to him, because he was with her. So he was born in Illinois on April 4th in 1893, so he was only a few years older than her. When he was four, his mother died, and he was then raised by relatives or family friends. I don't really know which. That's what the article said. And it seems like he wasn't raised like by one family specifically. I think he was kind of went around from different family members to be raised. He then started working on ships at a pretty young age and served on merchant ships and continued to advance his ratings and certifications while he did so. He continued serving on merchant ships through World War I, and he served as an officer on ammunition ships. During his wartime service, he was on three vessels that were sunk from under him by U-boats, but he survived.
Wow.
Yeah. And then after the war, he continued in the Merchant Marine and achieved a measure of prominence as a ship's officer. Then in 1926, the U.S. Shipping Board awarded Noonan his license as Master of Steamers of Any Gross Tonnage. Good for him. So when he was 34, he married Josephine Sullivan in 1927 in Jackson, Mississippi. After a honeymoon in Cuba, they settled down in New Orleans, where Fred worked for the Mississippi Shipping Company as chief mate on SS Carplaca. So after 22 years at sea, he began to pursue a career in flight.
Aviation. Baby.
So he got his commercial pilot's license in 1930. And then in 1936, him and his wife moved to Oakland, California, where he served as a navigator on a lot of flights across the Pacific. In 1937, him and his wife divorced, and he was involved in a car accident, a very bad one. He then met Amelia through mutual friends that they both had, and she chose him to be her navigator for her circumnavigation of the globe. Like, she specifically went to him and was like, I want you to be the one who is my navigator for this crazy trip. On the original flight, Noonan was supposed to get off of the plane in Howland Island because he didn't have the proper visas to go to New Guinea, but the second time around he did. So now I'm going to get into their second attempt, and then Ella's going to take it over. On June 1st, 1937, they began their second attempt to circumnavigate the globe. They completed 22,000 miles of the flight, and they stopped in South America, Africa, India, and New Guinea. On July 2nd, 1937, Noonan and Earhart departed from Ley, New Guinea, and their destination was Howland Island, which is a small island near Hawaii. Noonan and Earhart were unable to locate the island, but they also lost radio connection with the Coast Guard. They were in communication with a Coast Guard cutter during this flight called Itasca, and the Coast Guard When they lost contact, the Coast Guard was able to hear Earhart and Noonan, and they knew that they were lost, but they couldn't return communication, which is why they couldn't help them. So this was the last time that anyone ever heard from Amelia Earhart or Fred Noonan, and President Roosevelt issued a mass search for the pair and their plane. And Earhart's husband also financed his own separate search until October of that year. But ultimately, they were unsuccessful. And this is where Ella is going to take over. Just so you all know, she is dancing.
I'm falling asleep. I needed to do something. I needed to get up and move.
You're crazy.
Okay. So the searches were eventually called off. And then naturally, theories started coming out the wazoo.
I did not just say wazoo.
Well, where else would they come out of? Now I have to start over. So the search was called off, and naturally everyone comes up with a bunch of theories on what they think happened to Amelia Earhart. So I'm just going to go over like five theories, but there are way more out there. Yeah. But these are like the most popular. So the first theory and the most logical theory is that they ran out of fuel and they crashed the plane into the ocean, the Pacific Ocean.
To be specific.
Yeah.
It was the Pacific. Sorry.
And they drowned. So they think that the reason why they ran out of fuel is because they got off course a little bit. Some people think that her navigator, Noonan, might have been tired or had like a little bit of altitude sickness and just didn't navigate correctly, and they wound up off course and not getting to the correct island, and then they ran out of fuel and crashed. And the plane that they were flying was very front heavy, so they would have sunk pretty quickly. And if they didn't get out in time, or even if they did get out in time, chances are they would have drowned, because how long can you swim for?
Who knows how far they were from the nearest island.
Yeah. So then the second theory is that they landed, but on the wrong island. So they were supposed to land on Howland Island, and some people believe that they actually landed on Gardner Island, and this is supported by artifacts that they found on the island. I don't remember when, but there was a group on Gardner Island, I think only like a couple years ago, maybe 20 years ago, and they found artifacts that could have been Amelia Earhart's. They found, I literally had it written down. Oh, here it is. They supposedly found freckle cream that Amelia Earhart liked to use, and they also found a piece of plexiglass that would have been from the plane. But
what is freckle cream?
I don't know.
I'm searching it up.
So these were found on Gardner Island, and so people started to think that they landed on Gardner Island, but then weren't rescued, so they starved to death and died. But all of these things could have washed up onto that island if they had crashed like nearby, so this isn't necessarily foolproof.
Freckle cream is a vitamin A compound, and it is used to improve sun damaged skin and lighten freckles.
Well, that would make sense if she was flying a lot.
True.
In the sun. Okay. So the third theory is that they landed either on one of the islands or in the water. They like ran out of fuel, crashed in the water, but were then captured and taken prisoner by the Japanese.
Right.
This is supported by a photograph found, dates are very weird for these, a photograph found at some point, and supposedly one of the women in it was Earhart. Who knows?
Sorry, but photos in 1937, I don't think you can really guarantee anybody was who they said they were in a picture.
No, but then in 2017, investigators announced that another photo that had been buried in the National Archives for over 80 years showed Earhart and Noonan days after they supposedly went missing. And this is from former executive assistant director of the FBI, Sean Henry. This theory claims that they crashed in Marshall Island, on Marshall Island. They were captured by the Japanese military, and then Earhart and Noonan would have died while imprisoned. The photo that was found was of a plane being towed by a boat, and supposedly Earhart and Noonan were on the dock. But again,
I just don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, why? What would the Japanese want with Amelia Earhart? Like, you know?
Well, this brings me to my next theory. Theory is also that they ran out of fuel, crashed in the ocean, or landed on a nearby island safely, but then were captured by the Japanese because Amelia was supposedly a spy. Supposedly, this whole flight was actually, like, so supposedly this whole flight was a ruse, and the actual reason for them going was to spy on the Japanese.
I just, no. Like, no, it wasn't.
Yeah.
They didn't even land. They landed in South America, Africa, India, and New Guinea. Like, what does that have to do with Japan?
Yeah. So then the fifth and final theory, all these theories are pretty similar. But the fifth one is that they survived their landing in the Pacific, wherever they landed. They were captured by the Japanese, but then were found and rescued by U.S. forces. But then they were secretly placed in New Jersey, where she assumed a different identity of Irene Bolam and was a housewife.
Sorry, but she was never going to be a housewife. Let's be real.
No. And I think that theory also stems from the whole flight being a big ruse, and she was like a spy. So then once the Japanese captured them and then the U.S. rescued them, they were like, well, now you have to go like
undercover. Even more.
Yeah.
Like witness protection type thing.
But I don't know.
I do know. Wrong.
Yeah.
They drowned. That's what happened. They crash landed in the ocean or on an island and they drowned.
Mm-hmm.
Realistically, it was probably in the ocean, because if it was on an island, they probably would have found the plane by now. Way sooner.
See, that's what I would have thought. Like, the initial, like, searches that went out would have searched the nearby islands and saw a plane.
Yeah.
I don't know, though.
But let's be real. The Japanese did not kidnap them and take them to be prisoners of war. That is just not what happened.
Oh, but there's pictures.
From 1937. I could show you any picture from 1937 and convince you it's Amelia Earhart. Of a lady, of course.
Oh, so true. Well, she was a tomboy, so.
She had short hair.
Yeah.
Queen.
Okay. So now, this is like the new update. Crazy.
Which is why we even actually did this episode.
Yeah.
I saw like a post about it and I was like, Ella, did you see this? And then we're like, let's do this.
Yeah. So 87 years later, after their disappearance,
wow,
Air Force veteran Tony Romeo launched a 90-day expedition near Howland Island, where Amelia Earhart vanished on July 2nd, 1937. It was the final day of the search that Romeo's Sea Vision crew detected what appeared to be a sunken plane 6,000 feet underwater. So sonar images that were taken off of Howland Island, they appeared to reveal the wreckage of Amelia Earhart's plane.
I mean, it was definitely wreckage of a plane. They just think it's
well,
hers.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I should have said it that way.
No, it's okay.
So the reason why, like the theory that Romeo's search was going off of was the dateline theory proposed in 2010 by Liz Smith. She was a former NASA employee and amateur pilot. So this is the theory that I was talking about before, that Noonan suffered fatigue over the record-setting voyage and failed to calculate the change over the international dateline.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have led them 60 miles off of their course from Howland Island. And they ran out of fuel and crashed.
Which is drowned. A pretty logical explanation, if you ask me.
Yeah. So the sonar images that were taken could be another plane or could just be a rock formation. But the reason why, there's three reasons why they think it is a plane and, well, is Amelia Earhart's plane. So there, at the front of the plane, there seems to be twin vertical stabilizers. Which would have been on her plane. And where it was found is in a very flat and sandy part of the ocean, so it's mm-hmm. highly unlikely that it's a rock formation. It could be, but they...
Who's to say?
Yeah. And then also the dimensions of this object are very close to Amelia's plane.
Mm-hmm.
They also asked... other people, so they asked Scripps Institute and the Smithsonian for their opinions, and they both said that it could be likely that it's Amelia's plane. Mm-hmm. And their next steps are to partner with some people and go back out at some point in 2024 and try to get more pictures or send little robot guy, however they do it.
A little robot guy?
To the bottom
it's not
of the
moon.
Well, that's how they do it. They send little robot
a little
guy.
Robot guy.
Yeah.
A little robot guy.
Yeah. That's how they do it.
Okay.
I saw it for the Titanic.
She saw it.
I did. But anyway, so they're hoping to go back out in 2024 to confirm that it is Amelia Earhart's plane. If it is, it should be preserved pretty well because of where it is.
Yeah. Okay. What I saw in the article is obviously there is the issue of when they take it out of the ocean, they need to have like a humongous bucket of salt water ready to put it right back in, or else it'll literally just start deteriorating and they'll lose a lot of details and like information about it. So there is this other issue concerning basically who gets the plane if it is her, because she does have living relatives. Like there is family mm-hmm. of Amelia Earhart still around. They're not like her children or grandchildren because she didn't have any, but I don't know, like great nieces and nephews and stuff like that.
Cousins perhaps?
Cousins. Yeah, I think it was cousins, something like that. So, you know, she has family around. So does the plane go to her family? Does the plane go to the
Smithsonian?
Tony Romeo wants it to go to the Smithsonian. He thinks that's where it belongs. But the thing is, does it go straight to the museum? Does it technically go to the people who found it and then they decide what to do with it? Or when she obtained this plane, a lot of the money for it was given to her by Purdue University, and she had said that she was going to give them back the plane for the research. I can't remember exactly what it was. I don't have the article in front of me, but she had said that she was going to give the plane to Purdue University to hold on. So the issue is, does it go to the people who found it, her family, Purdue University, or a museum, the Smithsonian specifically? Which, if it does go to the people who found it, they want it to go to the Smithsonian, so they're kind of tied together. Yeah. So basically that's the issue of they're just not sure who it goes to legally, because there is some law about finding stuff in the ocean, like internationally. Yeah, I can't remember what it is. Let me look it up.
We'll look it up.
Finding things in ocean law. Oh, okay. It's called maritime law. So basically, basically finders keepers.
Yeah.
But it's hard to say what will happen with this just because a lot of that happens is like, I don't know, old pirate ships and stuff that the people don't have family related to anymore. So, you know what I mean?
Well, it's also like finders keepers, but at the same time, if you can't get it out of the ocean, then no finders keepers.
Well,
like,
yeah.
The Titanic, the people who found the Titanic, I don't know who found the Titanic. But, like, obviously they weren't, like, finders keepers.
Well, yeah. But obviously the people who found it, they're going to remove it and they want to, like, preserve it as best they can. And I'm kind of glad in this specific instance that they at least want it to go to museum instead of, like, keeping it for their own purposes to, like...
Well, yeah, because what would they do with it?
Open their own museum, do research on it, but you can only do so much research on the plane, you know what I mean?
That's, yeah. But for the most amount of people to see it, like, the Smithsonian Museum. And the Smithsonian already has, like, a bunch of Amelia Earhart stuff anyway. Mm-hmm. So I feel like keeping that all together would make the most sense.
I just hope they don't, like... try and make like a huge profit off it, you know what I mean,
like sell it.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, you don't know if that's what Purdue University would do, which I mean they probably wouldn't, they would probably keep it to be like, look at us.
Yeah, they'd probably make their own like mini museum.
Yeah, but then,
or give it to the Smithsonian.
But then who knows what her family is like, like what are they gonna do with it? Like obviously they're not gonna keep it because where are they gonna put
again,
it
again? They would probably give it to the Smithsonian. So,
or would they sell it, try to make
does the
money?
Smithsonian buy things? Like, say Amelia Earhart's family got it, and then they were like, we'll give it to you if you buy it off of us.
Yes, they do. They acquire objects and specimens each year for their collection through donations, bequest, purchase, so they do buy things, exchanges, and field collecting.
Interesting. But, like, if Tony Romeo's team really wanted to, they could be like, we'll give it to you if you pay us.
Yeah, which is, like... technically they have every right to do that, but it's kind of
I think their search is being funded anyway.
Yeah,
so,
and also they're gonna, you know, be pretty
popular,
well known and stuff because of this, so I feel like that's almost worth as much as selling it, you know what I mean, because you're gonna get a lot of business that way.
You know what,
it's free advertising.
I think it would be so silly if it's not actually her plane.
Yeah.
And this is all for naught.
Well, there's been other times where people have thought they found her plane, I believe.
Oh, really?
Not as, like, sure as this.
Okay.
But.
I looked at the images. It does look like a plane.
Yeah. I really enjoyed doing this episode.
Like, yeah.
I don't know. I've always, like.
I like it because it's such a, like, obviously Amelia Earhart is such a well-known person, but I feel like nowadays, like, no one talks about her.
You
but,
know?
Like, she is, like, you say Amelia Earhart and everyone knows who she is, but, like, no one really talks about
her
anymore.
And also, you know who she is, but then all this stuff that we both
found
out.
That's true. Do you really know who she is?
I didn't know she taught English to people. Like, what?
No, and I'm sure, like.
And was a photographer.
I'm sure at the Smithsonian, like, all of that information is on the little plaques, but. To be so real, people are just like, ooh, plane. Ooh, her jacket.
You remember Wizards of Waverly Place?
Yes.
There was the episode where they, like, found her in the Bermuda Triangle. This was at the point when Alex had moved out into her apartment, and then that ghost
they found
was...
Amelia Earhart?
Yes, and the ghost was haunting...
No? We'll be watching
no.
this tonight.
You know what? It might not have been Amelia Earhart. What it was this chick ghost
Girl.
Lost her, like, boyfriend, and he went down in the Bermuda Triangle. But they talked about Amelia Earhart because that was the whole other thing.
I was going to say, I don't think a Disney show would be like, we found Amelia Earhart.
I feel like they did.
What I was going to say was, when you were talking, I was thinking about it. I don't know. I could be wrong. I could just be wrong. But I don't know of any movies that were made about her.
Yeah, probably because they don't know what happened and there's only theories.
But, like, they could make a movie on her life and then end it with, like...
I have seen, I watched a documentary about her on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But again, that was YouTube.
I'm sure there's plenty of documentaries, but like, I don't know, they make so many like movies.
There's a movie.
Oh, well, I'm a liar. Never mind.
It came out in 2009. It's called Amelia. It is a biographical film about aviatrix Amelia Earhart. Let's see the cast. Hilary Swank played Amelia Earhart. Richard Gere played her husband. And Christopher Eccleston played Fred Noonan. Oh, and Sherry Jones played Eleanor Roosevelt. It's an adventure/romance movie,
it's not about her.
Supposedly it's about her, but... Oh, apparently NPR says that it had a flat script and a shallow story.
Well, don't watch it, guys. And I stand by my statement. There has not been a movie made about her.
But this was fun. Let us know what theories you have about Amelia Earhart.
Yeah, or what your favorite theory was.
Mm-hmm. Let me know if someone has ever theorized that she got kidnapped by aliens, because I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm sure that theory is out there. That's just like not in the top five, which kind of surprises me. We'll update, obviously, if they find anything else.
Yeah, if they confirm that it was her plane, and then what happens when they remove it from the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do a field trip to the Smithsonian.
We do a podcast in the middle of the Smithsonian. Like, hey, we are currently standing next to.
Look at this. We'd have to convert to a video format for that one.
True.
I fear.
Anyways. Vlog.
Thank you guys for listening. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at
@behind_the_crime.
And on Facebook at @justbehindthecrime.
I knew that one too, but she doesn't let me speak.
Shut up.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
No. We do also have a website, which is in the bio of our Facebook and our Instagram, and it has information about us, about our podcast, and then all the episodes are linked there as well. And eventually we're gonna get our sources up on the website. That's just harder to organize. So
yeah, not gonna lie, we've been very bad about sources. I was thinking about that earlier today.
We're sorry, guys.
It's, you know what? And also, we didn't talk about the fact that this was supposed to be last week's.
Oh, yeah. This episode was supposed to come out last week.
We got
However,
silly.
We're busy bees.
We just got silly.
You know, Ella's a double major. I'm graduating next semester. So we're very busy right now. And we just didn't have time to record. So we do apologize. We do like to keep to our every other week schedule. I don't like it being every 3 weeks, but there was just a lot going on this month.
There was a lot going on.
But we'll be better at about it from now on, so don't even worry.
Yeah, don't even worry.
We will see you in 2 weeks, and we mean it this time.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. Bye.